Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Warlord's Lady by Eve Langley. Narrated by Kasha Kensington. Prologue. Fiona splashed in the puddle by her house. Mama had told her to stay inside while she ran errands, but the sunshine beckoned, as did the hollow in the yard full of water from the rain. Splash. The stomp of her foot shot up water that soaked her tunic, but she didn't shiver in the warm fall sunshine. Her little feet stamped, and she wondered why Mama had forbidden her to be outdoors. She'd tucked Fiona away ever since those men on big horses had ridden past their home the day before. Speaking of which, one trotted into view. A large male with a full beard riding a brown horse with white spots.
"Hello there,"
he said with a smile that showed yellow teeth. "Hi." Mama had told her to not talk to strangers, but she'd also taught her to not be rude.
"Are your parents home?"
he asked, glancing at the hut where she lived with Mama. Papa had been put in the earth in the spring, taken by a fever that also claimed her younger brother. She shook her head.
"Well, then I should keep you company,"
he stated, sliding off his horse. At his wide grin, a frisson of unease went through Fiona, and she took a step back. "I don't need company. Mama will be back soon."
"Then we best be quick."
He lunged, and she shrieked, darting out of his reach, racing for the hut. Her fast little legs got her inside, and she slammed the door shut, but couldn't get the bar across in the hooks. The door was kicked open and the big man stood in the doorway, his smile no longer friendly. Fiona retreated, but there was nowhere to flee in the small space.
"Be a good girl now. Don't make me hurt you,"
he cajoled.
"Get out of my house!"
Mama's shriek from outside relieved Fiona, who didn't understand what the man wanted. The big fellow whirled.
"Mind your business."
"Excuse me? This is my home and you have no right to enter it."
"And who's going to stop me?"
The man stepped out of the doorway and Fiona crept forward to watch. Mama stood a few paces from the man, her market basket hanging from her arm, looking fierce, but also frightened.
"The Duke won't—"
"Won't know a damned thing because you'll keep your mouth shut if you know what's good for you."
"Leave, and I won't have to say anything." Mama's chin tilted.
"I'll leave when I've done my business."
"You have no business here," Mama insisted.
"Will you shut up for a coin?"
The man held out his hand and Mama recoiled.
"What kind of demon are you? Trying to buy a child?"
Mama screeched.
"Wait until the Duke hears."
"Oh, no, he won't,"
growled the man.
"Nattering nag."
The man lunged for Mama, who swung her basket. It connected with the man, but didn't stop him from grabbing her by the neck and lifting her. Mama's eyes bulged. Fear filled them, and she gasped,
"Run, Fiona!"
Fear froze Fiona in place. Crack. Mama went limp, and the man dropped her and then turned to face Fiona.
"Where were we?"
The expression on his face terrified. Once more, Fiona went running, her little legs pumping, and she might have made it to the woods if she hadn't tripped. The man fell on her, grabbing at her tunic with one hand, grunting as his other fumbled at the rope holding up his breeches. Sheer terror had Fiona trembling, but also fighting like a feral cat. She clawed and thrashed, but he was stronger. As he held her down and tore at her clothing, he told her what he would do. Awful things. Cruel things. Fiona felt her emotions boiling, hot and cold, as fear, anger, and desperation churned and exploded. Literally. The man turned into chunks of bloody meat. A shocked Fiona lay on the ground, wide-eyed. It took her a moment to realize the threat was gone. She raced back to her mother's body, but the unseeing eyes brought a wail to her lips. Mama was dead. A passing neighbor found her sitting on the ground, holding her mother's lifeless head. They also saw the remains of the man who'd killed her.
"Come with me, girl,"
he muttered. Fiona went in silence with Horatio, who brought her to the town magistrate. When questioned, she told them what happened, about the man who'd killed her mama, and how he'd tried to hurt her, but exploded.
"How did he explode?"
asked the magistrate. Fiona shrugged. "Perhaps it was Mama's ghost protecting me. What else could it be?" They placed her in a room used for the storage of linens and kept the door locked. She saw no one except the magistrate's wife, who brought her meals but didn't speak. She'd open the door, slide in a bowl, and shut it quickly. 5 sleeps later, the door opened, and a woman strode in. Her skin, the rich brown of the trees in the forest, her hair a lustrous black. Her eyes were a startlingly beautiful shade of green that matched her cloak.
"Hello, Fiona."
The woman greeted her softly. "Ma'am?" She gave a curtsy to the fine-looking lady.
"I hear you ran into some trouble."
Fiona bit her lip. "A man killed my mama."
"And what happened to the man?"
asked the woman. "He exploded."
"So I hear. Do you recall how you felt when it happened?"
She shrugged. "Scared. Angry."
"Has that kind of thing ever occurred before?"
She shook her head.
"May I hold your hand?"
Fiona hesitated only a moment before sliding her small fingers into the woman's palm. Heat emanated from the woman, a tingle that felt good and brought a smile to her lips. Colors danced before Fiona's eyes, wispy tendrils that she wanted to pluck.
"That tickles," she giggled.
"Aren't you a lovely surprise?"
the woman murmured.
"Tell me, would you like to leave this room and come with me to a place where you won't have to be afraid?"
"Is it far?"
"Yes, but we shall ride a horse."
"I've never ridden a horse,"
Fiona admitted, wondering if the lady would change her mind.
"Then you shall learn. The place we shall go to has teachers."
"A school?"
Her eyes widened. She'd heard of them. Places of learning for those who could afford it.
"Of sorts. We teach more than just your letters and numbers, though. In addition to lessons, you will have your own room, proper meals, and fine clothing to wear. What do you think?"
It sounded like a dream. She nodded.
"Yes, ma'am."
Fiona left with the woman, whom she noticed everyone kept a wary distance from. The horse was huge in her eyes, but the woman had no problem lifting Fiona to sit before her on the saddle. The journey was wondrous, and she learned much, such as the woman's name, Amelia, and the fact that she was a witch who sought out children with the gift of magic, like Fiona. They traveled to Mystic Keep, the home of the reclusive witches in the Akka Marshes, a stone fortress with many hidden passages and secrets. What began as a tragedy turned out to be the best thing for Fiona. She became a novice who caught on to her lessons quickly. As a teen, Amelia took her as an apprentice. By the time she'd turned 21, she'd become a full-fledged witch with a strong gift in all of the elements. When Amelia ascended to the throne, Fiona was by her side, glad to serve the woman who'd changed her life for the better. She would have most likely never left the keep if evil hadn't emerged to plague the world. A world that suddenly had a use
for witches. Chapter 1. Decades later. The soldier arrived in Cormac's war room, dusty and exhausted. According to a whispering Lomar, Cormac's general who had eyes and ears everywhere, the soldier's steed collapsed the moment the man slid from its back. Judging by the marks at its mouth and the cold sweat sheening its body, the horse had been ridden hard. The soldier, unshaven and smelly even from a distance, staggered in Cormac's direction. The guards he passed did not offer any aid. To do so would be an insult. Sitting on his throne carved from a single piece of obsidian, Cormac studied the weary man and wondered what had befallen him. He didn't recognize the fellow, but that didn't surprise. His horde numbered in the thousands.
Warlord.
The man dropped to a knee and thumped his chest while dipping his head in respect.
Your name?
Cormac asked, while wondering why his forearms tingled where his long sleeves hid the bracers he wore tight to the skin. An odd sensation that he'd never experienced before.
I am Yoan, formerly of Greenhead Valley, Warlord. I come bearing grave news from the garrison at the Riziad Pass.
A pass to the far east of Cormac's territory, eternally guarded despite the lack of civilization past it. The Andir mountain range separated them from the Valley of Mist beyond it. Many didn't understand why the warlords, not just Cormac but those who came before him as well, kept sending soldiers to the Riziad Pass to stand watch. It seemed pointless, and yet guard the Riziad Pass was part of his oath when he took command. That was it. No reason given as to why, but out of respect for his ancestors, he still did it to this day. Cormac's brow arched.
A long journey. You'd best have a good reason for abandoning your post. Not abandoned, Warlord. Sent by Lieutenant Call, the garrison commander, due to an emergency. An emergency that merited you traveling leagues and days rather than sending a message by bird.
The fort at Riziad kept a coop of Calmaeus, birds trained to fly back and forth between the Wexcord, the capital of Sraith, and whatever garrison they were assigned. Using the birds avoided delays in imparting important developments.
The Calmaeus are dead, Warlord. Everyone is,
Yoan blurted. The news rocked Cormac, and it took him a second to control his reaction. His nearby general didn't hide his expression of shock.
Everyone?
Lomar asked in a low tone. The soldier nodded. Disturbing news, and not something that should be common knowledge until Cormac knew more.
Lomar, clear the room!
Cormac ordered his second, as he eyed the guards at the far end of the room manning the doors. Far enough they shouldn't have heard, and even if they had, they knew better than to talk. Still, best to not test them. He'd hate to have to make an example because of loose lips. Lomar shooed the guards from the room and barred the doors to avoid interruption. As this occurred, Cormac stared at the soldier who'd left his post to bring this dire news in person. Stared long enough, the man fidgeted. He should, after claiming to be the sole survivor of a garrison 100 men strong. Once Lomar reached his side, Cormac growled,
"Explain." The troubles started with Piol. He was the first to go missing. Went on patrol in the pass and never returned. We assumed one of the Makath got him.
Aggressive creatures that were part bear, part feline, and lived in the higher elevations.
You didn't find a body?
Lomar clarified. Yoan shook his head.
Hog and Wexel went looking for him and never reported back. Neither did the next pair of trackers. Which led to Lieutenant Call doubling up the patrols from 2 to 4 men.
Cormac said nothing and waited for the man to take a breath. The soldier's voice dipped.
Even with 4 men, it didn't stop the disappearances. We lost 2 more groups before Lieutenant Call suspended the patrols.
Suspended the patrols? The whole point of the garrison is to watch over the pass.
Cormac remarked. Never mind the fact nothing but Makath and other high-altitude beasts had ever been seen in that cold and barren gash through the mountain.
The lieutenant knew you'd be displeased, but he didn't want to lose more men. He decided to set baited traps at the entrance to the pass and around the garrison. Freshly slaughtered lamb along with live ones. Whatever took out the missing soldiers didn't take the meat. Rather, it toyed with us by tossing the bait aside and replacing it with those who went to check in the traps.
Lomar interjected,
"Replaced? That kind of action doesn't sound like an animal."
"And yet, what was done?"
Yoen swallowed hard.
"I saw the bodies. They'd been strung in the snares, heads cracked open, innards pulled from their stomachs."
Savage, but most definitely not the actions of an animal. Hungry beasts ate what they hunted. Cormac tapped his fingers on the armrest of his throne.
"So many dead, and yet I never heard anything. Your tale seems unlikely. Up to this point, Call still assumed we dealt with a Makath or another beast gone rabid. The display made of those men forced the lieutenant to realize we might be dealing with something more. He wrote a missive to you."
The man fumbled at his jerkin, leading Lomar to put his hand on the hilt of his sword.
"However, he couldn't send it. When he went to the Aerie, not only were the birds all gone, Unwe, their keeper, was dead too."
"Something infiltrated the garrison."
A quiet statement.
"That's what we all assumed, even as we couldn't figure out how. There's only one door to get in, and it was never left unguarded. The lieutenant doubled the garrison perimeter guards, ensured the entrance was secured. It didn't help. Every night after, we lost several men."
"Several?"
Lomar burst out.
"And you're telling us you found no culprit? Bullshit!
It's the truth,"
Yoen insisted.
"It was eerie, as none of those killed screamed or even struggled. The next morning, we'd just find them. Some killed in their bunks, others left eviscerated on the parapets."
"Always killed in the same fashion?"
Cormac asked to clarify.
"Mostly. Slices to the gut were the most common. Some got it across the neck, too. A few had their heads caved in."
Yoen paused and took a breath before continuing.
"After the third night of losses and down more than 30 soldiers, Call ordered us to saddle up and ride out.
Abandoning his post rather than digging out the root of the problem."
Cormac's lip curled. He had no patience for cowardice. Yoen tried to defend his lieutenant's actions.
"What else could he do? We couldn't figure out how and who was killing us."
"So you deserted and what? Knowing of their disgrace, the rest of the garrison fled, leaving you to be the only messenger. Brave of you to volunteer."
Cormac's smile had the soldier quaking.
"No, it wasn't like that. We were supposed to leave together. The night before our departure, whatever hunted us went after the horses. We woke to find them slaughtered in the barn. The soldiers guarding them, more than a half dozen, left in pieces."
"And yet you arrived on a horse?"
Lomar pointed out.
"By chance. A mare running a fever had been housed separately in case she proved to be contagious. With only one steed left and no birds, Call entrusted me with his messages explaining what happened and told me to bring them directly to you."
"You said earlier everyone died. How would you know that if you left?"
Cormac questioned, clenching his fists. His arms still tingled, and he wondered why, but couldn't exactly pull up his sleeves in the middle of an audience for a peek.
"I don't know for sure."
Yoen's lips turned down.
"Call was supposed to have those remaining barricade themselves in the watchtower. He promised to light the signal every night at dusk. On my third night of travel, it failed to appear."
Dire news, if true. What could have killed an entire garrison of soldiers, And how could it have been unseen?
Cormac stared at Yoen before asking, What do you think attacked them?
The Puaka.
The fabled ghosts that lived in the land of mist beyond the mountains. Not real, and yet some believed in their existence. Blame the stories passed down through generations, speaking of monsters and magic, neither of which existed. Yoen's reply led to Lomar blustering,
That is superstitious nonsense, most likely either a stealthy invader or a wild animal.
Animals that can open locked doors without leaving a trace? Animals that can sneak up on a man and kill him without a single scream escaping?
Yoen became agitated.
Probably asleep at their posts.
A denigrating reply from Lomar, but in his defense, those sent to the garrison were the weakest of the horde. The slovenly, the poorer fighters, the disgraced. A posting to the Rizzied Pass was the ultimate insult to a soldier, as it meant they were deemed not good enough to defend the citadel or their borders.
Who else have you told about this?
Cormac asked.
No one, Warlord. I rode straight and hard here to give you the news.
Where are the other missives Call entrusted with you?
The man dug in his tunic and pulled out a parchment, rolled and bound with wax. Cormac gripped it, but didn't open it to read. First, he had to deal with the soldier.
Lomar, have Yoen escorted to a cell, one away from the others. He is to speak to no one.
You're punishing me?
The man seemed shocked.
As if I'm going to believe your wild tale without confirmation. Lomar is right. It is implausible that an entire garrison would be wiped out without a single sign of the enemy.
But it's the truth,
Yoen exclaimed.
Then you won't mind sojourning in a cell while I verify it.
He glanced at Lomar.
Ensure no one is allowed near him. I don't need him spreading rumors and panicking the populace. As you command, Warlord.
Lomar stepped forward to grab Yoen by the arm. Yoen didn't go quietly.
You have to listen to me. There is a grave danger brewing in the pass. My great-grandmother lived her whole life in Greenhead Valley, only a day's ride from the garrison, and she used to tell stories of a monster that lurked within the caves of Andir.
There are no caves, and stories are just that. Stories.
As a young man, Cormac's father had taken him to their eastern mountain and shown him the pass, saying,
We don't know why the oath insists we guard Rizzied Pass, but our ancestors must have had their reason, and so we honor their wishes.
What if it's true? What if that's why the garrison is there to protect against monsters?
Yoen shouted, as Lomar dragged him away.
Then you failed, and you know what the punishment for that is.
There was no mercy for deserters.
And you'll fail too,
Yoen snapped.
It's easy for you to judge, you weren't there.
Cormac's lips pinched at the insult.
Lomar took it even worse. He knocked the pommel of his sword against Yoen's temple, and the man collapsed.
Mouthy coward.
The warlord's second muttered.
All the more reason to keep him separate. Make sure you tell no one.
Cormac advised unnecessarily.
No shit.
Lomar muttered.
Imagine thinking ghosts and monsters are real. They aren't, but I still want you to head out and make sense of the situation.
Aye, warlord. I'll leave for the garrison in the morning.
Excellent.
Lomar left, with a limp Yoen slung over his shoulder. Once the door shut, the odd sensation in his arms disappeared. Cormac still pulled up his sleeve, but there was nothing to see. Just the dull metal of his bracers, intricate in appearance, inherited from the last warlord, their version of a crown. He pushed the fabric back over his arms before opening the first missive Call supposedly meant to send. It held a brief recap of what Yoen told him.
Warlord, this is Lieutenant Call of Rizzied Pass, informing you we've lost some soldiers in the line of duty. I've included the names so you can compensate the families. Most likely, a Makaf is to blame. They've been nosing around the garrison of late instead of staying in the mountains. I've assembled a hunting team. Expect some skins if successful. Makoth fur made great winter cloaks.
The first note seemed normal, advising him of the deaths so the families could be notified. The second, though, seemed as if written by a different person. Call's usually tight and concise writing a shaky scrawl. It began with an apology.
Sorry, Warlord, I have failed you. The garrison is just about lost to an enemy we cannot detect. If you receive this, then Yoan will have told you of the deaths, or should I say, the slaughtering of the soldiers in my care. I should have sent you notice with the first kill, but I thought I could handle it. Whatever hunts us is wily. It leaves no trace, no tracks. It can enter rooms with closed doors. Awake or asleep, it does not seem to matter. We have locked ourselves in the tower and will take turns keeping watch. I still have hope we can stop whatever is killing us. If we fail, tell my family I love them.
There had to be an explanation. Something that vicious and wily didn't suddenly start murdering. Whatever the case, Lomar would sniff it out. And when they found out who dared to attack Sraith, he'd bring the Horde down on their head and make them regret ever being born. Chapter 2. Dinner time passed normally. The snippets of conversation Cormac overheard, and those Lomar spied upon, made no mention of the soldier from the pass. Despite the flirting from several of the women in attendance, Cormac was not in the mood for company, and ended up going to bed alone. Perturbed by the day's events, he found himself wondering what could have happened to the garrison. If Yoan could be believed, then it seemed unlikely a wild animal had killed all those soldiers. So what did that leave? Most likely a new enemy. Many envied his territory, rich in metals mined in their numerous mountains and an exporter of the best horses in the world. But it had been more than 2 decades since anyone last raided one of the outer villages in the north. While some tried to sneak in via the northern bluffs hundreds of feet above an angry sea, most vessels sank before any managed the long climb. Those that did attempt the treacherous ascent were easily picked off by Sraithians who guarded their northern coast. To the south, Sraith's relationship with Ukruba had been good for more than a century, and their trading strong. West lay Akka, the land of the supposed witches who'd spent centuries keeping to themselves, most likely because their kind were executed until recently, as Sraith took a hard line against charlatans who pretended to do magic. That left the east, past the Andir Mountains, which he would have thought impossible. The mists beyond that range were known to swallow people and never spit them out. No likely scenarios. Still, a complacent warlord wasn't a long-lived one. Given the decimation of the force watching the pass, he'd have to replenish the garrison, perhaps with a better cadre of soldiers, until they'd assessed the threat. The severity of the situation meant Lomar would be taking some soldiers with him. Perhaps Cormac would visit as well. It had been a while since he'd been to the pass. His duties kept him tied to the citadel more than he liked. He missed the freedom of being his father's heir and second, riding out to inspect garrisons, quelling disputes, conducting drills close to the border to remind their flanking neighbors not to tangle with them. The more he thought of it, the more a trip sounded like a fine plan. His mother would most likely argue. His father, who'd retired from the warlord position, would understand, though. Sometimes a leader had to act in person instead of via an intermediary. With that decided, Cormac fell asleep, a dreamless state that should have taken him to morning. Only he woke suddenly. That never happened without reason. He noticed the tingling in his arms had returned. Could that have been what woke him? A still Cormac pretended sleep, keeping his breathing even, and listened. Not just with his ears, but with instincts honed by years of his father.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?